Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, 5 past 1. This show is going to take a bit of a cultural bent today, is probably the best way to describe it. We're looking at A Taste of Harmony, a day where you can bring food that represents your culture to work. It's a program we're going to learn a lot about with a couple of lovely people. Also going to be talking Oz Harvest and the CEO Cook-Off a little later in the show with Hamish Ingham, who is a delightful man as well. Lots coming up. Stay with. Yes, good afternoon. 6 minutes past 1 on your favourite radio station, Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon, and this is Cravings. And today we've got, I think, one of the busiest women in show business in the studio, because there's nothing that she's not doing. And a couple of the things, there's a nice crossover, a couple of the things we're talking about today, she's involved with both of them. She's also recently released a cookbook for kids, which we're also going to hear a little bit about. Her name is Alice Zablowski. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, if you sound a little puffed, you've sort of run to get here, haven't
tell
you?
Tell you what, traffic.
Traffic. But you're on foot, weren't you?
I parked.
Right.
And the parking inspector was there, so I know I have an hour.
Right. Excellent.
Isn't that perfect?
And you flip-flopped all your way up here to the studio.
All the way.
Excellent.
In the nick of time.
My other guest, I'm delighted to introduce. He's a youth worker and an inspirational speaker. His name is Abdi Aden. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you're an ambassador for Taste of Harmony.
Correct. Yes, I am.
I want to talk about Taste of Harmony first, because I love this idea. I saw it a couple of years ago now, and it's just something that's always stuck in my mind. So, we're celebrating diversity in Australian workplaces by encouraging our colleagues and our friends to share food and stories from different cultural backgrounds. Now, your cultural background, Abdi, is...
I was born in Somalia,
yep.
And I've been here 23 years.
Yep.
So I'm still behave like Somali, but I also love Australian way of cooking.
And Alice, why are you involved?
I was born in Georgia,
yes.
And I've been in Australia for 23 years. Same amount of time,
yes.
Isn't that nice? And I too enjoy cooking, Abdi, yes. Believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, people might recognise you from a cooking show on television, shall we say?
Yes.
Was that 2 years ago?
That would be, 2015? 3 years ago. It started in 2011. It feels like a lifetime ago, Pete. It's so weird.
So what season were you in of MasterChef?
Season four. Yeah, So way back when, we're old school now. Now, when I do things with MasterChef contestants, I'm like the oldest one there. It's bizarre.
Really?
Yeah. Not by age, but by look to me like a mentor.
Excellent. Yeah. I've just got to read this quick message. Tristan, who's clearly a Western Bulldogs fan, says, "Hi, guys. I'm loving the show. Listening with a wine, I'd like to say a big happy birthday to my cousin Peter, who is turning 60. Tristan, that's a very nice thing to do. And a big shout out to Peter, who is turning 60.
Happy birthday, Peter.
Yes, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Now, Abdi, I'm going to come back to you because I'm a little bit fascinated. You and I were talking before we came in the studio about your cultural background, and your dad was a chef. Now, in Somalia, that's quite an unusual thing.
It was. As a growing up, you know, I mean, I always liked it, my father cooking, because he was the softy in the parenting, and he used to give us a lot of food. But it was very unusual, because a father who's cooking in Somalia was, I mean, 80s as a kid. He was. I used to get teased. But at the same time, I used to like it. It wasn't a way I was embarrassed about it. And today it paid off. I came to Australia on my own, 15, and I become I cook myself. I mean, I'm not a chef. But
Your partner is a Tasmanian, and you said earlier that she doesn't care to cook very much, so you do most of the cooking.
I think she'd take advantage of me that I like to cook. you know, I mean, that's all right. But we have, you know, we talk about it that I cook and she likes my cooking. But being Somali, but also I mixed with other cultures in Australia, because Australia is so multicultural, and I'm very lucky to live this type side of the world.
I want to talk about Somalian cuisine, because I don't know a great deal about it. And Alice, I'm not sure if you do either. What does it consist of? What are the staples?
The Somali food.
Yeah.
The Somali food is the main Somali food is maize. You cook it as the main one, and then it's a bit like a porridge, but a thicker than porridge. And then you mix with any sauce you like. That's the first course of meal, and then the second one will be the maize, and then you put on a soy milk, and that's really nice. So you must have that if you know having a meal, and the meal's always eaten by 2 o'clock daytime.
Right, so that's your main meal of the day.
Carb loading.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, you always need to lie down after some carbs. And there are a number of Somali restaurants in Melbourne.
Yes.
Are they authentic in your mind?
I always advise the Somali people to make it welcome other people. Because if you're going to open a restaurant and you want to make a living, earning money, but and also you want to really brag of your culture, you need to include all Australians. You know, and they keep always asking me, what do you think? Because I'm involved a lot of things. And
well, you're ridiculously busy. You're a bit like Alice. I don't know where you two find time between you.
So, and because Somali people recognize me, because I've been, go back to where you came from, Sirius too. It's quite, and I do a lot of public speaking in Australian schools, being a youth worker. So people ask me my opinion, and I always say, if you open a restaurant, food is one of the best thing to interact or to talk to other people and include other people.
Well, I was having a conversation the other day, and I think, Alice, you'll agree with this. When we get together with our friends, it's always we grab a bite to eat, or we grab a coffee, or we grab a wine, or a drink. Food is a very social thing, and it's so important in all cultures. Tell me a little bit about your Georgian heritage and what you remember of food when you were little.
Well, my Georgian heritage, so my grandparents actually fled to Georgia during the pogroms of the sort of early 20th century. So I'm kind of a Russian, Georgian and Jewish as well. So my cultural cuisine is
quite a mix,
an amalgamation of things. But Georgian food is very garlic, coriander and walnut heavy. So because Georgia's kind of on the spice road, we got a lot of those spices coming through. So I would say that it's kind of like Middle Eastern, Asian and Russian food put together. It's delicious.
It's an interesting combination.
It is.
And how important is the Jewish side of your tree in the way that you prepare and serve food?
I'm absolutely not kosher, if that's what you're asking, Pete. I'm the worst Jew ever.
I was trying to be a lady.
The worst. But as far as food in Jewish culture, every single Jewish festival is all about the food. So I think that that's kind of a great way of getting kids involved as well, because they know that, oh, it's Passover, so I know I'm going to have these certain foods, and it's Hanukkah, I know I'm having those certain foods. But in a really interesting way, I think growing up, I was a terrible Jew, but since MasterChef, I've actually become kind of like the go-to Jew. It'd be the same for you, Abdi.
It is.
Everyone just kind of says, well, you're Jewish.
Yeah, so
you know,
let's
things.
Talk to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
It is 13 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. Alice Avlasky and Abdi Aden are my guests. We are going to chat a little bit later to Hamish Ingham, who's doing the CEO cook-off, which, Alice, you're also doing.
Yeah,
so
why not?
Another, Lord knows you are doing so much stuff, and we'll try and cover it all off in the next 45 minutes. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Dan Churchill from MasterChef. You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
13 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. I have Abdi Aiden and Alice Zavlaski in the studio. They're both here to talk about A Taste of Harmony, which is a week of activity from the 16th to 22nd of March, which is tagline, share a world of food and culture at work. So Australian Workplace is encouraging colleagues to bring food to work and share those cultural stories that go with them. I love this idea. Absolutely, because if there is nothing more, I think, important for us in understanding the diversity of our cultures than to do it with or over food. Alice is sitting there nodding furiously.
So much nodding.
Well, it's I think to try and understand somebody's culture, it's an easy place to start. Mm. And it's a common place to start is with food. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they say walk a mile in a man's shoes, but why not just sit down and share a meal with the man?
Exactly. And absolutely. It's where we learn about cultural difference. I had to ask about the difference between Somali and Ethiopian food, which to me, I know you're quite close geographically.
Yes.
What is the difference? How does it...
The difference is where Ethiopians are more chilly, you asked me before. Yeah. They have, well, Somali people, chilly is not a big... And often people ask you because they don't know. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is Ethiopian have a lot of different, like a bean thing. You know, they cook like the Egyptian, right. Where Somali people are very... what I see it as a very basic, you know, the maize and the sauce, the meat, the way they cook. And then you eat with the soy milk, because the milk, they used to get rid of the fat, and then that becomes the soy. Mm-hmm. So everything comes from, you know, organically. My grandmother used to do it. So that's the difference where Ethiopians are. Yeah.
Historically, if we were to go back to certainly not prehistoric times, but you know, 1,000 years ago.
Yes.
Where did the influences come from? Like you talked about, sort of where Georgia sits on that spice road. Mm. Where did the influences for Somalia come from as compared to Ethiopia? Because I think they are quite different.
Yeah, quite different. The Somali one comes from, because Somalia in Mogadishu, where I was born, has used to be a trade city where a lot of Middle Eastern and European used to come and sell stuff. Mm. You know, this is, we talked about 500 years ago. Before that. So Mogadishu was a trade place. So a lot of cultural, I mean, even when people look at me, I might look African, but I don't look Ethiopian, I don't look West African. Mm-hmm. So people change the appearance, and the food change too. Mm. So the food comes from Middle East, even, you know, like the food you talked about, Alice, that type of food came to Somalia, and that's where people are eating it now.
Right.
How much do you integrate your Somalian heritage? So when you've been here for 23 years,
yes.
When you cook, and I'm going to ask you this question so you're on notice, when you cook in your home,
yeah.
How much of it is Somalian? How much have you adapted to Western influences or Asian influences or those other influences? How do you bring that all together on your plate?
It's interesting you ask that, because I, early stage in my life, I used to eat more Western food.
Mm.
And this is, being a youth worker, young people often find they try to assimilate other cultures. But older you get, once you hit 26, 27, 30, you or kind 40, of go back to, yeah, try to make ourselves young. You know, you kind of go back to original test, the first test in your whatever it is.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter what you look like, but it's just the way you test the food, I think, is the main thing. So, you know, and that's, I go back to last, you know, 5 years, I love Somali food. You know, I just love it because, and I'm not ashamed of or anything like that. But I was young growing up. I liked Western food, and I won't mention the takeaways that I used to eat. But
yeah, I think we can take a guess.
I think we can take away that.
Yeah, yeah. Alice, with you, you've just published a cookbook for kids.
Mm.
We'll talk about the CEO cook-off later. And you're doing lots of stuff. How much do you bring your cultural heritage into what you do? So if you're writing the cookbook for kids, for example, how much of your family history comes into those dishes?
I've actually had a couple of really great opportunities to share dishes from my family heritage in a couple of other cookbooks that have come out as a result of MasterChef. So I was contacted by the Monday Morning Cooking Club, who are a group of Jewish women that cook in Sydney.
Yep.
And they brought out a book where my mum's khachapuri, or cheese pie, is one of the recipes. And sharing that, the thing that was that really made me quite emotional about it was that my mum was so proud to do it, and it was—it's a dish that you know, that she's so proud to share with people, but to be able to share it in a published cookbook was incredible. And the same goes with Danny Valance in the mix, the Thermomix cookbook. I shared the satsivi, which is like a chicken with walnut sauce. And again, so I find opportunities to sneak those dishes in there because they're delicious. It doesn't matter that where they're from, they just taste good. But in my own cookbook, which will be out, shameless plug.
Shameless plug. We usually do them between 5 to 2 and 2 o'clock, but go nuts.
Okay, well, really quick. Yeah, I heard the last shameless plug, but I'll so 1st of April it comes out, and it's not so much a cookbook, it's like a reference book for kids. So there are lots of fun facts and things. So there are opportunities for me to put in anecdotes, like, for example, you know, coming to school for the first couple of times with brissoles or katliati, which are like, you know, meatballs, and people are like, you're a weirdo. But now I love those rissoles. You know, they're amazing.
As you've grown, you've become perhaps less ashamed and more proud of their cultural heritage?
Absolutely. And I think MasterChef was instrumental in that as well, because trying to find what my place was, because everyone kind of has a niche on MasterChef, and I could never figure out what they wanted me to cook. And so it kind of encouraged me to do a lot more research into my heritage. And I read from cover to cover the Bible on Georgian cooking.
Yes.
And it really kind of reminded me that this is what's special about you and you need to celebrate it. So I think that's...
Where is the focus on kids come from?
I'm a teacher by trade, so it was always going to be about kids. Yeah. And I think that when I was teaching, trying to encourage kids to not be a cog and telling them that it's great to be different. It's, you know, don't worry about trying to be cool. I taught middle school. So that's grade 5 to year 8 is when you're trying to find yourself and you're trying to kind of be like everybody else because you think that's what is expected of you. But the more different you are, the more that, you know, you need the high fives. So,
and the more you can celebrate that.
Exactly.
I'd love to hear from you. 0427JOY949, a text message. You can email onair@joy.org.au or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. I've got a voucher to give away for the Pancake Parlour, which is... you know, great fun. But what I want to know is how you incorporate your cultural heritage into your food when you're cooking in your home kitchen. 0427JOY949. Send us a text message, email onair@joy.org.au or send a tweet to cravings_joy949. I'm really interested in your cultural heritage and what it means to you and how you put it into your own plate. And of course, there's a voucher up for grabs for the Pancake Parlour for, I think, the one that we collectively judge the best. So, do get in touch with us. Now, I want to go back to A Taste of Harmony because I'm going to come to you back to you, Abdi. Why is it important that we share our cultural heritage and foster better relationships in the workplace through food? Why are you an ambassador, I guess, is the short question.
Yes, the important thing is that I've worked last 13 years local government, which is mainly I was the only person who came from outside Western world, and early stage I was quite younger then. I never really talked about my culture, just in case people might turn around and make fun of it. But the important thing is when you share with someone food in workplace, it makes it. Everyone is active, like it makes me I belong there. So it's quite important to share with cultures, and also we all are human. So once you eat food with people, you get relaxed, your body get relaxed, and you get to know each other. And I think it's very important. It's one of those things, and the business thrive because you know you talk about things, and when you share food, you become more like you know, if get involved in liking your own workplace, coming every day.
And Alice, can you add to that why you think it's important that we use food as the conduit for understanding?
I think that Abdi hit the nail on the head when he said that it relaxes people and it creates a kind of common thread, because if you have nothing else in common, you can talk about how tasty whatever's in front of you is. And there are so many opportunities within the workplace to bring a plate, but people tend to bring in the same sort of stuff every time or maybe not even put in the effort. You kind of go to the supermarket,
I did a couple of potluck sort of lunch things with a charity that I was working with, and somebody quite literally came in with a packet of sliced ham from the deli at Coles,
and exactly.
I don't know that that's much of an expression of anything but laziness. And I think I love this idea that I grew up in a quite a multicultural in country Victoria, a multicultural town where most of the kids that started school with me didn't speak English as a first language. So we learned to understand very quickly that, that they would come to school with the best food because they're Italians. So almost entirely Italian population. So we had to learn to speak Italian as much as they had to learn to speak English. And I went to school with, you know, boiled egg and saline sandwiches and, you know, pressed meat sandwiches and stuff. And it was great because kids would come to school and they would have salami and prosciutto and bocconcini and all this beautiful array of flavours in their lunches. And whilst for the first couple of years it was, I thought it just stunk. It really started to make me salivate when I could smell the food of other children. So I think that's why this Taste of Harmony appeals to me, because it does allow us to be able to start a conversation with somebody who may be from a different cultural background to our own. Mm-hmm. And I just think food is the perfect way to do it.
Yes.
Preach.
Preaching to the converted.
Are you from Shepparton, Pete?
No. I'm from Mildura.
Oh, Mildura.
Well, just outside of Mildura, yeah. In fact, which had a huge Italian population. Mm. So,
And they got newly arrived from Sudan and Afghanistan. So even better.
Absolutely. Yeah. It started, well, I remember in the 70s there was a bit of an influx of Turkish and Middle Eastern. I don't know whether they were refugees or they were just people trying to find a better opportunity in the world. And they would come and pick grapes through the fruit season and pick citrus fruits and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, we were sort of, and I, with no disrespect to my parents, we were taught to be a little bit scared of those people. And I'm so glad that they were there in the 70s, because I started to learn about cultural diversity, which I hope has had some sort of effect as I've grown older. We're going to have a little track and some messages, and then we'll come back and talk about the CEO cook-off and some more about A Taste of Harmony. Don't forget 0427 join 949. Send me a text message about your cultural background and how you incorporate it into your food. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9, 25 minutes past one.
Hi, I'm Heston Blumenthal. You're with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed you are with Pete Dillon. This is Cravings Joy 94.9, where it is 31.7, clean, close to 32 degrees on a very delightfully warm Melbourne day at 1:30. Alice Zaslavsky.
Yeah, nice work. I'm just used to saying, just call me Alice.
Yeah, Alice in Frames. Alice in Frames. He's in the studio, as is Abdi Abedin. Yours is so much easier to pronounce, Abdi.
So much. Lucky you.
Because we have been talking about A Taste of Harmony, which, of course, is a week of activity where you're encouraged to start to break down some of those cultural barriers at work by bringing food and sharing it with other people, where you can start to discuss those cultural things. And I was offering I've got a prize to give away if you're a member of Joy and you haven't won a prize in the last 2 weeks. I've got a $50 voucher to the Pancake Parlour. You can treat yourself. You deserve it. Drop into the Pancake Parlour, serving sweet and savoury pancakes and crepes to make your mouth water. So what I wanted to know was simply how you incorporate your cultural heritage into your food, and I'm going to ask that of my next guest, who is here to talk about the CEO cook-off, which you're also doing, Alice, because she does
I'm
everything.
You're making it out like I'm an envelope.
No. From Bar H in Surry Hills, Hamish Ingham, good afternoon.
Hi, how you going?
Good, thank you. Say hello to Alice. She'll be up there in March.
Hi, Hamish.
Hello.
See you soon.
Hi, Alice. How are you?
Thank you.
And I have Abdi in the studio as well.
Hello.
Hello, Abby. Yeah.
So, Hamish, why are you involved with the CEO Cook-Off? I guess, first of all, 40 of Australia's top chefs with a combined 38 chefs' hats awarded to their restaurants will unite with more than 100 business leaders Monday, March 2, Carriage Works in Sydney, to cook for 1,000 vulnerable Sydneysiders. This is all in aid of OzHarvest. Why did you choose to get involved?
Well, I must be a top chef then, mustn't I?
Well, you must be.
I love OzHarvest. First and foremost, Ronnie Khan is an amazing person.
Dynamo.
And I can't say no to her. So anything she asks of me, I'll say, yes, Ronnie, no problem, I'll be there. And it's a charity to me, foremost, it's in our back garden. So
yep.
It starts there, and if I'm going to be involved in a charity, I want to help our community, essentially. So I wanted to start there, and it's perfect for me. I can use my cooking skills to help people in need.
Well, let's talk about OzHarvest just for a minute, because I've got this little page of fast facts. Okay. They've saved more than 10 million kilos of good quality surplus food from landfill. delivered the equivalent of more than 30 million quality nutritious meals to people in need, stopped more than almost 20,000 tonnes of carbon emissions being released from landfill. They've rescued food from more than 2,000 generous food donors, delivered food to more than 600 recipient charities that feed thousands of vulnerable men, women, and children. They operate all over the country. It's a fairly exhaustive list of good things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been involved for about 2 or 3 years now, and it just keeps on growing every year, and you know the amount of money that gets raised each year just keeps on going up and up, and it's just, you know, it's going from strength. You know, they've just opened in Perth, which is fantastic, and I'm sure there'll be more states to come as well.
So how does the day actually work? So CEOs and business execs are all sort of arrive in Melbourne. The glitterati of the hospitality scene are rubbing shoulders. How does it all work?
Well, so we all get there. Each chef gets usually assigned 2 or 3 CEOs. So we have a little group of our own. And what we do, I get the CEOs to get their hands dirty. You know, I kind of stand back and let them go for it. And their role is to help me cook about 40 to 50 portions of a main course. And then we have a table each. And then what we do is serve up a beautiful meal to the guests that are invited. And there's also, you know, they're sponsored, you know, Brasserie Bread have sponsored the entree, which is a beautiful antipasto plate.
Yep.
And then we've got, you know, Black Star Pastry in Newtown, which is, you know, one of Sydney's best pastry guys.
And how good are they?
Yeah, pretty good. And he is he's donating the dessert this year, which is pretty exciting.
So you on the night, there's you prepare a 3-course meal and feed 1,000 homeless and disadvantaged residents.
Exactly, and hopefully, you know, people go onto each chef and CEO's page on the website, and you know, we look for sponsors there to sponsor us along the way.
That's what I was about to ask, Alice. How is this money made?
Well, the CEOs actually pay to be involved, and people contribute money as well. So OzHarvest is obviously a not-for-profit, so everything goes back to these vans that go around. I actually spent some time in an OzHarvest van last year, and the amount of produce that would have gone to waste if it hadn't been picked up is crazy.
And it's all good quality stuff.
All good quality stuff. And OzHarvest is such a well-oiled machine that they need the funds to keep things going.
Mm. So people can log on to a website and make a donation to you or to
exactly
I think it's www.ceocookoff.com.au.
Exactly. Well done. He's all over it.
He is all over it.
Five stars.
Hamish, let's talk a little bit about Bar H while we've got you. So you and your wife were at Woods.
I've had Bar H for about 4 years now.
Yes.
Which has been going strong. We also, I come from being the head chef at Billy Kwong for about 9 years. Mm-hmm. With Charlie Kwong.
Yep.
That's where I get my Asian influence from. So Bar H is Japanese Chinese cuisine, so it's a bit of a mix of the two, which is great and interesting. So that's kind of my background. So 4 years owning my own restaurant so far, and you know, love to give back to the community.
The industry as a whole is an industry that is very altruistic. The moment there is a need for something, and I sort of go back to you know, there's been floods, there's been fires, the hospitality industry as a whole is always the first to put up their hand and say, we will assist in this way, however it might be. Why do you think that the industry is as generous as it is?
Look, I think it comes down to the hospitality industry is a really tough industry, and I think, you know, we all have, you know, suffered through ups and downs, and I think at the end of the day, we just want to give back something to the community, and I think, you know, that's what it means to me.
But aren't you giving back something every day when you put your heart and soul on a plate?
We are, but people are paying for that, you see.
True. You raise a valid point.
Yeah. So by me giving my services to helping people in need. I think that, you know, I think that's really important to me, especially.
But I think you're right, Pete, that hospitality is intrinsically generous.
Yeah.
It would take a crazy person to do 80 hours a week in a kitchen just for, you know, because they want to give.
I guess it's also because we do spend our time looking after people, whether it's we're feeding them, whether we're at a table serving them, whether we're getting them a drink, whether we're cleaning up after them. We are a service industry, and I suppose that's where some of it comes from. Hamish, would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're at hospitality, so that's what we do. That's it.
Question for all of you. So, Abdi, jump in here as well. Do you find that the moment there is a function to be had, it's always at your place and you always end up cooking?
I am. I always start cooking and everyone says, oh, Abdi, try to, you know, to cook something to show us. But then I end up cleaning and cooking and all that. But I love doing it.
Mm. Alice, are you with the same?
Absolutely. There have been a few times where we're back at somebody's place for an after party.
Yes.
And I end up raiding the fridge and feeding everybody. Mm. Just, it's innate.
Yeah. Hamish, you do that as well, I assume, the moment there's a celebration.
Yeah, I think it just comes naturally. I'm the first to say, you know, every Christmas, you know, everyone has to bring a dish and, you know, I'm not cooking this year, and then when it gets close, I'm like, okay,
don't worry about it. I've got
and
this.
And then I totally take over and go, okay, no one's cooking anything. I'm doing the whole thing.
I've got this. Yeah, all good. Well, Hamish, where is Bar H for those that who travel to Sydney or are listening in Sydney, they want to call in?
Okay, so it's located in Surry Hills. On Foster and Campbell Street, so it's about a 5-minute walk from Central Station, which is nice and close if you're in the city or catching the train.
Excellent. And a website?
Website is www.barhsurreyhills.com.
Excellent. Now, I can't let you go, and I ask this of every chef that I meet, including Michelin-starred chef that I met the other day. What is your secret shame? You get home from work at 1 o'clock in the morning. What is that thing you reach for that you know is naughty, that you know is bad? You may have stopped and got it on the way home through a drive-thru, or it may be something you have hidden in the back of your cupboard so none of your chef's friends can see it. What is your secret shame?
Ooh, that's tough.
No,
look,
simple.
It's not tough. On my walk home, there's a lot of amazing Lebanese restaurants on Cleveland Street, and they do the meanest kebab you've ever had in your life.
Is yours. Excellent. Yeah. It's a nice change from a grilled cheese sandwich, baked beans out of a can, or ramen noodles. So they're the three most popular to date.
Oh, really?
Although this Michelin-starred chef, and I won't mention his name, but he did say that ice-cold chocolate biscuits and a cup of tea.
Mm. How English.
Yeah, it's terribly British. Hey, it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And good luck in the CEO Cook-Off. We can go and donate for you at ceocookoff.com.au.
Excellent. Thank
Good
you
stuff.
Very much,
That's guys. Hamish Ingham from Bar H in Surry Hills. We'll be back to talk more about A Taste of Harmony and indeed many other delightful things with the very busy Alice in Frames and Abdi Aiden.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Now, I have a $50 voucher to give away to the Pancake Parlour, folks, and all I wanted to know was something about the cultural heritage in your food. I have a message that's come from... Where are they? Daryl and Michael of Vieirville, who tell me that they would like to go in the draw. They love the show every week, and I think that's a good enough reason to put them in the draw to win this voucher, because we are talking about cultural diversity in food, and I think that's probably using it as a tool for social cohesion, which is what the Scanlon Foundation wanted to do, and I highly applaud it. What are you going to bring into the workplace in that week, Abdi?
I will be bringing a Somali rice, and it's called sambus.
Yep.
But totally not the sambusa people say, but Somali sambus is got a minced meat, onion, and garlic, and then the other vegetable is a curry, and so it's called sambus. It's really normally when people respect you highly or you come from a long way, they cook for you sambus. So I'll bring that, and everyone loves it.
So it's rice based, is it? It's sounding to me like it's like a pilaf or a biryani,
Along that line. Yeah, okay. It's really nice. And always,
how do you cook it?
You cook the first the flour. You make it like a bit base, mm-hmm. but very thin, and then you burn it a little bit on the saucepan, mm. and then that's when you roll it to the meat, but three angle. And one thing I did find, every time I bring the workplace, mine goes first than everyone else. And I'm not saying it because I don't like bragging, but all people, doesn't matter what culture, like that sambus taste of burned bread, mm. and then inside is not chili at all.
So inside is minced meat and rice. So it's
no, minced meat, garlic and onion.
Onion, right.
Yeah, so you cook that smell. You don't cook the onion too much because...
Sounds a bit like a crepe.
Yeah,
like
I'm getting to savory, or a samosa or something.
So normally, sometimes it takes a long time to make the
actual... I was going to ask, how long does it take to make them?
The actual base is a long time. The mincemeat, you just kind of, warm it up and, like you just cook and cook quickly. But the actual base takes a longer, sometimes maybe an hour to do it 50 sambus. Mm-hmm. So every time I like to impress my colleagues,
yes,
it doesn't matter what we do. Like if you were to tell me today, I would have brought it and impressed you to have it, and you will never forget at the that type of thing.
Pretty devastated. I'm totally
Devo right now. So
that's something I love to bring with people that I really respect.
Okay, so sambus for you. What would you bring, Alice, if you were to bring something?
If I had a job. Yeah.
if you're going to... Place. Well, you're very busy. You have a million jobs.
I think a lot of Georgian cuisine is fantastic because it can be eaten cold or hot.
Yep.
So there are some fantastic sort of salads. There's one dish in particular, which is a char-grilled Georgian eggplant with a garlic aioli, and that is killer. It ruins you for the rest of the day. If you're going to bring it into work, don't ever have a meeting after you eat it. But it's delicious. It's yummy. Mm. Yeah, really, really good. I'd bring that.
So you obviously have a very clear passion for food, and I, as much as I hate the use of that word and its relation to reality television, was that always there in you? Like, did you always have a love of food that you wanted to explore?
I think the thing that I love the most is the eating of the food. Yes. That's what I love, because my fondest memories when I was a kid was sitting in my grandpa's garden at his dacha, which is like a summer house, basically, and he was a very keen gardener, so he had heaps of different fruit trees, and I would sneak around behind him eating the fruit so that he wouldn't notice. That's when I was like 4 or 5 years old. So it's always been there. And I think the way that I would describe my family is we're not a foodie family. We're just a family that loves food. Yep. That's just the way it is. We always come together with food. So
I think, again, I want to refer back to Taste of Harmony, because I think most celebrations in any culture center around food.
Yep.
Except perhaps for the bulk of mine, which is English and Irish, which, we don't do food. We treat food drinks. Appalling disrespect. It's more about a drink. But I think, growing up, I've lived and worked overseas, and I've just seen how food sort of gathers people together. And I think it crosses all cultural borders and all religious borders. I think that the interesting thing how people come together is because they want to share a meal, and the fellowship that goes with that is incredible. Charlie has sent us a message. Hello, Charlie, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm a Sri Lankan heritage, and I love adding chilies in my dishes. I truly enjoy the show. Thank you. You're in the draw, and
maybe she can add some chili to the pancakes.
She's actually sent it twice, once via email and once via text message. So I'm with you. I'm chili mad. Do you eat a lot of chili?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The older I get, the more I can tolerate it. When I was younger, I couldn't handle it. But
like Somali chili is they put the garlic and lemon and they squash the chili and that's a green, not red.
Right.
Green, yeah.
So it's almost like a harissa paste with the garlic and the lemon.
Big time. Delicious.
Mm. I know. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
And Somali people often, when they invite you, you don't bring anything.
Okay.
No. You don't.
Yeah, but see, I've seen ads on the TV where they say, oh, don't bring a thing.
No, but that's in Australia, that's what multiculturalism, but we have in, especially Melbourne. But in honesty, Somali people, when someone invites you, means they did invite you, so you just come and make sure that, otherwise if they don't have, then they don't invite that particular person. So that's the background of it. And that's why when I invite people, my friends who are born in Australia, I always say, don't bring things, but doesn't mean do not bring anything. So I make sure I mean it. But they still bring something. They feel bad.
Well, you have to. I can't go to a house without bringing anything. Whether, you know, even if it's a bottle of wine and a bag of crisps.
Yeah, but once you get to know me, you won't bring. Yeah.
Is it an insult to bring something?
Yeah, but you don't want to say someone who actually don't know your culture very well. Mm. So it's not, but it is. In Somalia, it is. Ooh. But in Australia, you accept that other people, Somali, they're not the mainstream. So
they don't
you
know.
Don't get offended by that.
Yeah, cool.
I want to delve a little bit into how you got to be in Australia.
Right.
And you can tell me to be quiet and mind my business.
No, that's fine.
How did you get to be here and what was the genesis of your journey here? Alice, again, I want to know why your family came to Australia as well. So think about that. Abdi, how did you get here? What was it?
I am in a good way. I'm very unusual to the way I came to Australia. Mm-hmm. The war started when I was around 13. I lost my family, whole family, so as an individual young man. So I left Somalia. So I went to Mogadishu, Cairo, in Romania, Germany to Melbourne. It's a long story. But
it's a long journey.
Yeah. So by the time I get to Australia, I was 15.
Right.
So, and I haven't seen my family still. And
so you lost all of your immediate family?
That's what I have been told at that time. They all, you know, died in the war, but I did find my sister in Holland 10 years later. It's a long story, and I did find my mother in Kenya refugee camp, and my father died. So it's the missing thing. When family members missing, that's the hardest. When someone passed away, you kind of know.
You know you can grieve.
It's still not good, but, you know. But so I came to Australia, and I had to learn English language. But the other thing people don't talk
about. I just want to, how did you get to Australia? So you said you went to Egypt. So,
I was there for 3 days and Romania 1 year.
What did you do? How did you end up in Romania? Were you in a refugee camp? What was that?
Well, the day I landed, the day after, we all went to UN. Somali people, Kurdish people, there's other people. Mm-hmm. So this is early 90s, you know, and 90s. So we went to the refugee and they put us a place where Romanian government, a year earlier, they got rid of their... His name was
Nicola Ceausescu.
Yeah, so I went there, but we used to cross the borders to Yugoslavia, and that's when the Yugoslavian war was starting. So war must followed me everywhere. Never luck. But then I made to Australia. It's a long story, but then I was transferred in Germany, and then when I came to Germany, the Germans were returning people to Somalia because the government was saying bring back.
Right.
People said we couldn't stay in Germany in that time. So lucky I got Fiza, my father's friend who worked at Somali embassy, helped me to come to Australia. And so it was difficult in Australia. I couldn't speak the language.
You had to learn the language. You had to deal with a culture that I'm assuming was entirely foreign to you.
Yeah, and when I came to Australia, there was not many African people looking around. So people always say that things that out of the blue, you think that's not even true. But I... Someone like me, I had to learn, because people who came with their family were struggling. Imagine me. So 12 months I basically spent it home to home, and not even a proper home, like I stay with families, I stay with churches, because you know religion is really good when you need in that sense. But and mosque, and if I had to, and I stay with, and I didn't have a lot of Australian friends at the time, but I had to learn English language. The system is the hardest thing, because that's where a lot of people don't make it, you know, become successful in themselves because they don't know how to navigate the system.
Alice, how did your family end up in Australia?
Our story similar in some ways, but I'm a little bit speechless after hearing that, and I want to hear more about it. But it was the start of the 90s, so end of the 80s, start of the 90s. Communism was coming to a bitter end in the Soviet Union. Perestroika was starting. My parents decided to leave, partly because of the civil unrest in Georgia, but also because, as Jews, they were overlooked for positions of authority.
Yeah.
The Jewish surname basically meant that every time they would be overlooked. So they wanted a better home for us. They were all set to go to Israel.
Yes.
We were all set to go there. But then the gates to Australia opened and my parents got skilled migrant sort of visas. basically had to sell everything in order for us to get here. And they bombed the airstrip about 3 days after we left. So we flew out on one of the last planes from Georgia and came to Sydney with absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing, because all valuables had to be left in the Soviet Union. They were considered national treasures.
Yeah,
exactly. And I remember not speaking the language. And on top of that, because we were living off welfare, essentially, Jewish care looked after us, there was no such thing as toys for us. We would go, or buying toys, we would go through the hard rubbish around Bondi, and that would be shopping. And I found some really great board games, half full board games that I'd play with, and, you know, dolls with one eye. But that was my childhood, and I didn't know any different. And I kind of, you know, you feel very grateful for the things that you have, I think, coming from there. And I went back to Georgia in... last year in June, and
for the first time
and for the same for my parents as well. And honestly, the memories that I have of Georgia are beautiful memories. I remember it being this beautiful lush green place, and I went back and there were buildings in ruin, people absolutely devastated, and there were a couple of touristy areas, and the food's still delicious. If you are thinking about going to Georgia, please, that's the way to get a country back up, is tourism.
Yes.
But it just made me realize how lucky I was to get out, because my prospects would be completely different. There's no MasterChef in Georgia.
No, there is not. I'm aware of that. I'm sure you would
do something.
I think we need to have a couple of messages, and we'll come back and wrap up.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
We have about 2 minutes to wrap this show up. I'm still somewhat gobsmacked by those two stories. And so this is why you should get involved, ladies and gentlemen, with A Taste of Harmony. You can go to the website tasteofharmony.org.au and find out more about what that day all means, and why it's important to reach out to others. Of course, the CEO Cook-Off, ceocookoff.com.au is the website as well. So two very important things. Charlie, congratulations. We have a voucher here for you. Charlie is of Sri Lankan heritage and loves adding chilies to her dishes, and anything that is about chili works for me. So Charlie, we'll have somebody from the station be in touch with you shortly on how to pick up your voucher to go and enjoy pancake parlors, because
there is a pancake festival today called Maslenitsa, and it's at Maslenitsa. It's kind of like butter festival, I suppose. It's a Russian Orthodox thing, so I don't know too much about it, but it's a Russian festival. Go to the Royal Exhibition Building in Melbourne,
and it's a pancake festival.
I think Broadsheet wrote it up, so check it out online.
And Abdi, if we wanted to find a Somali restaurant, is there one that you would recommend?
Yeah, there's one in Union Road in Askodvale.
Yep.
And that I like that one.
What's it called?
It's called Somali Restaurant.
Somali Restaurant in Union Road in Ascot Vale. That's on my side of town, so it's nice and close. Yarraville Festival kicks off next weekend as well. Do go down and check it out, especially their harvest, the harvest part of the festival, where you can bring all of your excess produce from your garden and trade it with other people for their excess produce. Look at yarravillefestival.com.au. Thank you for your company today. Thank you to Alice and Abdi, and of course to Hamish. It's been a delightful program. The next program is Standing There Waiting by Katie Purvis. Is looking very busy, so is Emily, so we'll hand over to them right now. I'll be back next Saturday, where we're talking about the Bridge Road Festival, which is taking part as part of Melbourne Food and Wine. Have a very good afternoon.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.